One. Yes, hello. Hello.
Hi. I'm Aaron, and this is Ian Jacklin here with me. And so what can you tell us about this Baby Rico incident? I mean, we don't know that much about it. We've seen the YouTube video. Can you tell
okay.
us if the water
I'll
is being
give you
blamed
the whole,
at all?
I'll give you the context. One of the big controversies that's been going simmering, you know, mostly underground or not in mainstream media, but also not out of mainstream media, I'll clarify that later, is this enormous infected battle fight over whether AIDS is a viral disease. And the family who is now at the heart of this situation that we're in, the Nagel family, they're a family in Minnesota, and it's actually a two-generation, what shall I say, crisis. The Nagel, Steve and Cheryl, adopted their daughter, Lindsay, as an infant from Romania. When she was an infant, and this was in 1990. And she, I'll speed up the narrative. Lindsay, when she was brought back to the United States, tested positive for HIV on the antibody test here, but not in Romania. They were pressured to medicate her with AZT, the drug of choice at the time. No, they weren't pressured. It was just, they went straight into the, you know, the standard of care, which was AZT. She suffered tremendously, and she stopped growing, and she got smaller, and so forth. And they felt, you know, we'd rather give our daughter a few good months than 3 good months than 6 bad months. So they took her off AZT, also at the council of a few people in the so-called AIDS dissident perspective, such as Professor Peter Duisberg in Berkeley. They consulted a few people. They took her off AZT. Though the doctors were threatening, you know, you're going to kill your daughter and so forth. So this part of the story turned out very joyously. The girl started thriving and growing. She never got sick. She never got AIDS. She never got anything. She just grew into a beautiful young woman. She fell in love, and she got engaged, and she got pregnant, and in late December gave birth to her own baby. So here she is. She's been HIV positive all her life, and never gotten sick and never taken any of the medications. So naturally, this whole family is disinclined to test and freak out and medicate and so forth. So Lindsay gave birth to her son, Rico, on December 19th, 2012, at the Mayo Clinic. At the Mayo Clinic in... I want to get the exact town right. It's not Minneapolis, but it's about a half-hour drive away. In any case, Rico's born healthy. He has a little meconium. They put him, he's full term, no problem with the pregnancy. Everything is fine. And long story short, all of a sudden, the apparatus, the AIDS state apparatus, comes down on Lindsay and the baby and his family, and they say, if you don't test him, we are going to take him. So she's just given birth 15 minutes before this happens, after 36 hours of labor. And her father, Steve Nagel, says, Lindsay, you better do as they say, because he knows these dynamics. So she agreed to have him tested, but it appears he already had been tested. All this business of testing, by the way, there's nothing to test at this stage in the game. Every baby is going to reflect the mother's antibodies, so they're going to be positive at birth. Then there's supposedly a fancier, more accurate test for it's called the PCR test, and we don't have time, and it's not the time and place to discuss this. But suffice to say, like the testing frenzy that they went into, no matter what, would have been bankrupt. It's all bankrupt and meaningless until the baby is 18 months of age. But as we now know from all the media reports in the last few days, there's a new mania in AIDS treatment. There's always a mania in AIDS treatment. And the new one is to bombard newborn infants with a cocktail of drugs to sort of stop them from becoming HIV positive later. So there's no foundation for this, just like there's no foundation for anything as far as I've been able to see in, you know, a quarter of, like, 25 years of AIDS reporting. So I, what happens next is so extraordinary. It's so outright fascist. The parents being intimidated, the young parents, agree to medicate their baby according exactly to protocol, and they do. They actually do not miss a dose. Nevertheless, they are threatened with, they're being extremely vigilant, and they're allowed finally to leave the hospital. I don't know, I think Rico was in the hospital for like 2 weeks in the beginning. And then there was just this strange hair trigger moment where they had taken a drive to another. By the way, there is a link that I want to send you after the program where all of your listeners can see this whole story. They actually did a news story on CBS local in Minneapolis last night that was excellent, that tells this whole story. Anyway, the baby was actually abducted out of Lindsay, the mother's arms, in the family's home, with no cause. They had not missed any dose of the medication. They had done absolutely nothing wrong. They were driving to another state to seek a second medical opinion. But they were not fleeing. They were not leaving. They were accused of missing two appointments. And I don't want to spend too much time on this because either way, there was absolutely no cause for this baby to be removed from the home and from the parents. So the baby goes into, I think the first 4 days, they didn't even know where Rico was. So it was an absolutely horrifying situation. He turned up at the hospital back, you know, where he had just gotten out of, at Mayo Clinic. And now he's really under it, you know. He's being intubated. He's being given 3 AIDS drugs and a battery of other drugs. Nothing's wrong with him, but this is HIV treatment mania. There's a lot more detail that I could fill in, but let me just say it's been about 2 months of this. He's still in the hospital, and he's basically destroyed. He's really fragile. He's on life support. And his own grandfather has told me that he doesn't know if Rico's going to make it. So the AIDS treatment machine and the Child Protective Services out there took a healthy baby, forcibly took it from its mother, forcibly medicated the baby, and now the healthy baby is on life support. That's the situation we're in right now.
Wow.
So is the mother being charged, or I mean, why can she not see her own baby?
She can see the baby. She can't have custody of the baby because they disagree with her. They think every baby born to an HIV positive mother, even if the mother's perfectly healthy, is a medical emergency. And I should add, this is a very important detail. The mother is the only survivor of pediatric AIDS treatment from the early 90s, and she's the only one who did not take the prescribed drug. All the others who took the drug died. There were 11 others. So there were 12 children total, early 90s Minnesota, who were HIV positive, and they all sort of knew each other. And Lindsay was the only one whose parents took her off the prescribed treatment, and she's the only one who's alive today. She's 22.
How were they able to do that back then?
That's a really good question. That's a really good question. And I've wondered, I think my simple answer, my intuitive answer would be to say that the the state apparatus was not, it didn't have itself together the way it does today. You know, there's just much more surveillance, and it's much more like East Germany now. There were just, you know, holes in the system before. So they could browbeat parents, but they hadn't yet figured out how to just simply abduct the child, you know.
I see. That's very interesting. I've made a documentary called iCureCancer.com, and I'm making part two right now, and it's to address the issue that if your child has cancer and they're under 18, you have no choice, you have no rights. They have to get the chemo, radiation, surgery, the drugs, basically. And that same scenario as that case, it's just a known fact that the people that don't do the chemo or the radiation surgery have a much better chance at surviving the cancer. They live. It's the ones that do the Western medicine that don't. And so that's why I was asked in this conversation. And I was just at the Long Beach Health Expo, and I was hanging out with Liam Sheff.
Uh-huh.
Now, you know him?
I know. I do know Liam. He's quite brilliant.
Yeah, exactly.
He's very good.
Yeah, him and Everett Scott Bell had a talk there. And I had never dove into the AIDS, HIV thing. What was the movie, House of Numbers?
Numbers, yeah.
Yeah, there's a great movie called, anybody doesn't know about this topic, just watch House of Numbers. It basically shows what we were just talking about, that the HIV tests are bogus. They don't even work. You can go get a flu shot and then get tested for HIV and be positive. And yet, you don't actually have HIV. It just looked like it. Their tests are faulty. They're not good. And so you get onto a lifelong program of these horrible drugs, and you end up dying anyway. Whereas if you wouldn't have gotten that flu shot or many of the other instances, there's many instances where these tests are not accurate. And Liam's telling me that, and he knows the science behind it. I don't. I'm just a filmmaker. But he was explaining to me that it's true that it's ridiculous that the HIV test is not accurate, and it doesn't even cause AIDS. They don't even think HIV causes AIDS. So it makes sense that the girl that years ago was able to get off the drugs is still happy and healthy today. And it's just unbelievable that they're taking that child's child and trying to do it to them. That should be one of the main focuses on the stories. If you guys get anything on the news, is like, you know, they let the mother not do drugs, and look at her, she's fine. Why are you murdering this child? And the only thing I can think of, like on a spiritual level, because this stuff makes me very angry. I was interviewing Jay Matthews, whose child's being forced chemotherapy and being murdered right now. And I said, how do you not kill them? How do you not get a gun and go?
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. Right? I know. What did he say? What did he answer to that?
He's just tearing his hair out. Him and his wife are dying. I wake up in the morning. I stayed with them for a few days when I was interviewing them. And every morning they have to get a shot of something. It's not the chemo. It's something else. But it just hurts her so badly. I mean, I thought there was a home intruder and was raping or burning or tearing flesh off somebody. That's a horrible. And they have to go through that every morning. And then he goes to the court and he's trying to explain to them, well, look, what about raising the alkaline level, or what about, you know, depending, because hers is bone cancer, which is, you know, tumor, so it's not the blood cancers. I understand the blood cancers may be caused because you're too alkaline, but she's got the bone cancer, so she's too acidic, and they were getting her proper treatment to raise her alkaline level, to detox her, to build her immune system, and she was doing great. And the cops caught up, took the kid away, and now it is murdering her with the chemo. It's not looking good. And he doesn't know what to do. He goes to court, brings up all these facts, but they just take the MD's word over his, because he's just a regular guy. And they beat him up, you know. They basically say he's a bad parent, this and that. Meanwhile, he's doing the right thing. They're the murderers. Same in this case, what's going on, you know, with Rico. It's out and out murder, and I do not know how. This, again, what my point was going to be on this was the spiritual aspect. I try and understand. I ask God, I'm like, what? You know, what should we, can't we just kill these people like in the Wild Wild West? Which obviously we can't, because I wanted to kill them myself. I was in Chicago. I wanted to steal that daughter, take her to Mexico. Probably, if she wouldn't have, I don't know, she has so much chemo and radiation at that time, I don't know if she would have survived then. But it was her only shot, but I couldn't, because had I done that, or Jay was to do that, or this family was to do that, then we go to prison for the rest of our lives. We can't help anybody out. So it's so unfortunate.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. So what you're saying is right now in pediatric cancer treatment, the state can take a child and forcibly give the child chemotherapy totally against the parent's will. Is that, that doesn't surprise me at all, but is that the new reality and standard? Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm making IQ Cancer Part 2. Part 1 teaches you that cancer is curable, and it's like, oh, well, but I can't use it on my child. You're gonna use chemo on a tumor type cancer, which is known to only have a 3% success rate, whereas this alkaline diet and hemp oil, like I said, is curing everything. You're not gonna let me do these things, but I know people that have used it and it's worked because of your laws, your bureaucracy. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So again, my spiritual lesson in this is that these people, unfortunately, the children or whoever's involved are martyrs in a way. They're going to probably be murdered by the state. And I can only hope that we, the people, stand up, band together, and change these laws. Change these laws. Otherwise, it's just going to keep happening.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the thing is, they're using, obviously you know this, certainly in AIDS treatment, and I'm sure in cancer too, we all agree that if there's a medical treatment that works and there are parents who are so out there they refuse to help their own children, maybe there should be some modification for that. Actually, I'm not sure I believe that anymore because it's such a slippery slope. But the idea of claiming success with chemotherapy, never mind claiming success, there's nothing to be successful with in this situation with Rico. He was already healthy. He was breastfeeding. He was growing.
Right.
But they have decided to put unbelievable dark meaning in this business of antibody positivity, right? So they say, oh, it's really serious. And the other side says, well, actually, we know all these people who have, and in the Nagel's case, you know, their own daughter, who have been HIV antibody positive. So the big what if, is what if antibodies to HIV are not meaningful or a portent of illness or a portent of death? Then what happens to all this radical culture of medication? And what we've seen in AIDS, and this I can tell you categorically, is nothing dissuades these people. Nothing. It's been admitted that a generation died on AZT from AZT, mostly gay men. There are big numbers going around that I don't trust, you know, 300,000. That sounds like too, but all sides in this battle agree, yeah, that's what happens. We went nuts. You know, AZT is chemotherapy, by the way. It's an old chemotherapy drug that was, oh, you'll appreciate this. It was rejected for testing, I think, in 1960 because it was just considered too toxic for human use. That's one of the drugs. It's chemotherapy. So the first line treatment in AIDS was chemotherapy, which comes out of the fact that they were thinking it was cancer. All those early researchers were cancer researchers, so there was this cancer-AIDS overlap. So the first line treatment for HIV was a cancer drug. But it wasn't just a chemotherapy drug. It was a chemotherapy drug that was rejected by the NCI as being too toxic in 1960. So you can imagine
wow.
toxic that is.
Yeah. Whoa.
Right. So this is one of the drugs that is being, as we speak, being pumped by tubes through a plastic tube into little Rico's belly. Rico, whose mother survived alone in her state by going off this chemotherapeutic agent called AZT. And this is why a lot of people are wondering, why did Lindsay give birth in a hospital? Because they couldn't fathom that these people would pull anything like this, because they believed they had won the argument by a landslide, right?
Right.
Our daughter is alive and she's the only one. Now, they knew that the AIDS authorities and so forth were not thrilled about them. By the way, never called in all these years. All the ones who are saying you're going to kill your daughter if you take her off AZT, not one of them ever called, said, could you bring her in for testing? She's the only one who's still alive, or we understand she's still alive. We want to look at her blood. Not once. So these people
right.
are pathological. They are not interested in what keeps people alive. They're interested for, it's really incomprehensible. It's like trying to understand a fetish, but an extreme one, or an obsession, or some psych. It's really a psychological disorder. You can't reason with them. They just want to medicate within reason. They want to bomb people with these drugs because they're in this strange, twisted relationship with the hallucination they call the virus, which they think is a real entity and that's really deadly and wily and ingenious and evil. And it's become like this bizarre deity. You know, I've said it's like a negative deity. And so they've assigned so much negative power, like perfect negative power, to this deity called HIV. And there's just nothing any of us can do. You can't even present them with a healthy person who's been HIV positive and is like Lindsay, you know, full, a grown, beaming, just beautiful adult, no problems. And they don't look at her and say, huh, you know, what did you guys do right? Because
yeah.
I have to conclude they're not interested in life. I don't know.
Exactly. It happened to, the reason why I got into this is a very dear friend of mine about 15 years ago cured herself of terminal cervical cancer, holistic methods. She was given a year to live and had it completely out of her system in 8 months. And that put me on this path, hence me making the movies, et cetera. But she found it interesting because the UCLA doctor said she was a medical miracle and said, you want to know how I did it? And they said, nope. And that was it. And I've talked to dozens of cancer patients that did the same thing. So the only thing, again, there's nothing we can do. Nothing. Short of, you know, getting a gun and going to kill a bunch of people, but then that's no good because we don't solve a problem. We just show our anger. To solve a problem, what I'm thinking, I think these people need to be, like, you know, if somebody gets a DUI in a little town or wherever, they'll put their picture in the paper to embarrass them. So what I plan on doing is, because I'm a filmmaker, and hopefully getting other filmmakers involved, is getting cameras in the faces of these doctors. Like, whoever the doctor is of this child, his picture should be on YouTube, story should be on YouTube, because as far as I'm concerned, these doctors, whether it be for chemo, for the AIDS drugs, or whatever they're doing, they're only committing manslaughter at this stage, which I believe they should be charged with. I mean, if I the guy in a bar and knock him out and he hits his head on the table and he dies, I get manslaughter, probably 10 years. I think that's what
the doctor should. You know, that's really brilliant that you would use that word. That I haven't heard that word, but it's exactly the right word. I was thinking of this. I mean, none of us have been able to function ever since Rico has, this little baby has, I can't tell you how many people, you know, whether they're hardened, like laconic scientists or called me up or been in other situations where they've, you know, spoken about it online. People are just breaking down, both from empathy, heartbreak, to watch this torture and of this baby, and then the fear of the possibility that he could die. And then the complete terror and incomprehension that this is happening in the United States.
Exactly.
Your head just spins.
Yeah,
you can't even...
I just looked up AZT and because I wanted to compare it to chemotherapy in terms of doctors. Let me just explain. Doctors who prescribe chemotherapy to cancer patients actually get a percentage share.
Yes.
They basically get paid to prescribe chemo, And so I just looked up AZT to see if it was the same kind of situation. And it looks like it's a similar situation, whereas the shareholders get the most of the money, and who pays for most of the drug is the taxpayers. So it's a kind of
sick incentive. Oh, my goodness, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Wow, because we've all been wondering, you know, AZT fell from grace. It never should have been in a position of grace, but there was actually a downfall where there was a conference and a paper and a chilling, terrified researcher from the United Kingdom, Ian Weller, who came out and said it was called the Concord Study, and they didn't go very far with it, but the Concord Study admitted that AZT was not prolonging life, and if you read between the lines, it was shortening life. This was a big deal back then. It was in 1993. So, you know, AZT, that was the first big battle, and it started to really come out and even be admitted to that many of those early, I don't know what age you guys are, but in the early years, the pictures of AIDS victims, and that was the language then, were classic chemotherapy. I mean, they were, you know, emaciated, gaunt, bluish, you know, it was AZT. And now that AZT was pushed, I was going to say pushed over the cliff. The trouble is it wasn't pushed over the cliff, and this is something I've never quite unraveled. Why didn't a drug that was considered, you know, that has such a catastrophic reputation, at least in my world, right? I mean, like thalidomide or something, like one of these drugs that's just, ugh, why would they want anything to do with it? They kept it in the mix. It's in the mix. It's in Rico's mix, you know? And so what you're saying may be the answer. That you're saying they make money from every...
I know they do for the cancer in the chemo drugs. I mean, I interviewed Dr. Gonzalez, who's probably one of the most successful cancer treatment alternative guys out there. He was in Suzanne Summers' book, Knockout. He uses enzymes and nutritional approach, and he's got a 95% success rate with one of the terminal cancers. It's skipping my head right now, but and he basically was saying that, I mean, it's that he was going to be a bone marrow transplant guy, because they were opening up those like they were McDonald's in New York where he was studying, and he changed his mind and he decided to become a natural practitioner. He was already an MD, but he just saw that this stuff wasn't working. So they're the guy that would have been committing manslaughter, but he has a heart and a soul and said, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to be poor the rest of my life, comparatively speaking, because if you got a McDonald's chain for bone marrow transplants, you are a multimillionaire for good. And he wouldn't do it. What these people are doing today, and to get back to my original point, I think they need to be held accountable. There's a great movie, it's a French movie called The Beautiful Green, where it's these aliens from another planet, they come down every few hundred years to Earth, see what's going on, and they were basically saying that, you know, why should we even bother going down there? They don't know what they're doing. But one of the lines in the movie was during the trials in like 2050 or something or whatever. Like, in other words, it made me think someday there are going to be trials, I hope, to nail these people. The ones that are committing manslaughter right now are the ones that are ignorant, which ignorance is not an excuse to break the law. But the ones that know this, I think they should be charged with murder. And until they are, I want to have their faces up on YouTube. I want these interviews up on YouTube, all over Facebook. I want the children at their schools to say to the children of the doctor, saying, wow, I just saw your dad on YouTube. He's killing people. You know, I don't care, because it's true. This needs to stop. We are not allowed to get guns and go and defend ourselves. We have to do whatever we can. So I use my camera like a gun, and we need to do this.
You know, yeah, all I would say is I don't want to be the voice of whatever, but, like, aren't there laws in place now that if you say anything like that, they can come and arrest you for that too? I mean, we're in a pretty totalitarian situation here. So, who would do the arresting? I love the idea of them being charged with manslaughter, but the whole mentality would have to change, where it has to be evidence-based medicine again.
Right, which that's all got to change too, because when I made my film, my object was to school people the best that I could on what to do. Like, what would I do if I had cancer, my mom or my dad or my family, anybody, you know? And I wanted to be most accurate. So, sure, I looked at the studies, but then I realized the studies, the evidence, it's all paid for by Big Pharma. And so I thought, well, it's common sense. What's the best? I knew this from fighting. I learned how to be I was a champion kickboxer back in the day. And I used to box with Lennox Lewis. Why? Because he was the heavyweight champ of the world, or was going to be. He was the best around. And so for the cancer filmmaking, I wanted to interview people that were the champions. People that, to me, a world champion is somebody that had a deadly disease and cured it using holistic methods. So I just put the camera in their face. You can see the eyes, which is the pathway to the soul. And you just hear what this person did. They had terminal cancer. Now they don't. What did they do? You know, boom, there you go. That, to me, that is better evidence than any science-based evidence. That's all. They can lie about all that. I mean, it's all, and it's known. We've caught them in a bunch of lies where they have bogus studies and stuff. It's really horrible. And it gets back to the whole big picture of who runs this world. Is it Obama? Is he our president? No, it's just a puppet. You know who runs our world? It's the Illuminati. It's the Bilderberg Group, the Zionists, whoever you want to call them. The 1% of the 1%, the elite, they run the world. And until we can, the 99% squashes that buck, we are just going to continue to be murdered and tortured by these evil rich bastards, if you ask me.
You know, I have felt a darkening, a sense of gravity, a sense of horror in the last, you know, since the last week, especially the last 2 weeks, that feeling where you realize we are in it, we're in the full-on horror of what used to be, we could all kind of tinker with in our imaginations about the futuristic nightmare, totalitarian fascist society. And
1984, yes.
You know, and no more thinking that we're in a democracy that can be reasoned with. If I were of childbearing age now and bringing, I would be extremely reluctant to bring a child into the world in the United States because of all the intersections in that child's life where they can murder your child, they can take your child, they can torture your child, they can cause your child permanent brain damage. They can do all these things with total impunity. And
yep.
I'm in shock. I'm genuine. I walk around here in shock. Sometimes I just sit and I kind of just stare at my hands and I think, because the darkness got so dark so fast it came upon us. All the writing was on the wall, but we didn't really believe it, or maybe we did believe, you know, you just can't believe it. Now I believe it. With Rico, I believe anything. I'm transformed, radicalized. I feel happy that I devoted 27 years to trying to expose this HIV/AIDS criminal racket, and I used to be a little bit, perhaps, mealy-mouthed about it, and now I just feel that if I would give anything, I would do anything. I'm not interested in, I still need a career, or I need to be published, or I need any of that. I just need to spend the time that I have left on this earth fighting the evil with everything that I have. And I think your idea of exposing them, because they are malignant narcissists, most of them also, so they can't stand to be seen as unpopular or unloved. So I think exposing them with pictures and names is an excellent idea. I would cool it with the gun talk, because I don't want you to get thrown in prison, but the exposing their faces stuff is great.
Maybe I haven't said that yet. No, I would never do that. I believe I'm a very spiritual man. And I actually feel sorry for these people because they've just been misled and corrupted by the world. And they probably don't have any kind of connection with God. I'm sure some of them are actually innately evil. I know the ones that run the world are, and that's the problem. But no, I'm a loving guy. I want the best for everyone, and I just see that.
I know. I hear you, my dear. I hear you exactly. This is the time. A real battle is upon us, and it is necessary. And we can no longer sit back and just comment on Facebook.
Yeah, you're right. And I'm glad to hear you still got that warrior spirit, because when you were talking there for a second there, I was afraid you might go to the point where you said, I'm giving up, I'm throwing in the towel, but you're not. You're still a warrior. That's great, because we need more warriors. As soon as have you ever heard of the 101 monkey effect?
Yes, I have, yeah.
I don't know if it's true or not, but I'm hoping and praying it is, because the more we get on the radio, the more we make movies, the more we talk, the more we raise the consciousness of the masses, that apparently, you know, if there's a certain percentage of the population that knows the truth, then everybody will know the truth without even actually having to read about it. I don't know if it's kind of mystical stuff, but anyway, I just feel like if everybody knew what the three of us know about this life, about this world, about cancer, about AIDS, about the situation of the medical, if everybody in the world knew this, it would be over tomorrow. Everybody would leave whatever they were doing right now and walk into every hospital out there and stop the oncologists from giving chemo, saving children like Rico. I mean, it's just, we don't have the numbers yet. There's so many people out there that think we're conspiracy theorists or we're this or we're that. And so all we got to do is put one foot in front of the other and keep going, head down, hands up, just like when I was boxing, you know, and just, eventually it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I believe good always beats.
When they come in the United States, in America, and they take a baby, an American baby on American soil, out of its mother's arms, and she's crying and screaming. You've seen the video where she's weeping. It's so heart-wrenching. People around the world have been to me to say, I couldn't even watch the whole thing. I mean, people are usually pretty cool and intellectual about this AIDS stuff. It really got stuck in a very esoteric place for years, and the different factions and camps and all that is you know, valid and important. But this story, man, people are absolutely beside themselves, and I feel the spell is broken. People are so angry, outraged, and not just AIDS science. Now, we have been saying for so long there's something real wrong with, there's something abnormal and strangely, like, depraved about AIDS science. They're lurid. They just want to drug. They're not at all. And what's actually happening in the global consciousness right now is that we're realizing how the human body works, how organic we actually are, right?
And
these people are just stuck in the Stone Ages with this chemical lunacy. It's really like the chemical army versus the organic army, you could say. You know, that's the war. That's how, there's one war, a friend of mine in Sweden said, there's one war, Celia, and it's the war between the global corporations and organic life. That's how he put it.
Very well put.
Right.
Celia,
that's
the war. I have a question for you. Sorry to interrupt. On this new popular story, which is going all over the mainstream media, about a baby being cured from HIV or AIDS using the same kind of antiviral drugs. What do you think about this story?
So transparently, embarrassingly ridiculous that I am starting to feel sorry for them. I will never feel sorry for them. Couple of points. Okay, first of all, very, very, again, very strange and very creepy. Where's the baby? Where's the mother? Where is a photo, a picture of the baby? Where is a quote from the mother? Or possibly the mother and the father. It's like it was a rural mother living in rural Mississippi who comes in and is pressured to test for HIV. I'm just going to give you the backdrop of the story. This is going on all over the place. I did a Bob Tuscan's show the other night, and he told me his wife just had a baby. They tried to have a home birth, but they wound up in the hospital. And in the hospital, they started pressuring her to have an HIV test. He's seen House of Numbers. He said, no way, it's not going to happen. And they actually threatened this couple with losing custody of their child. also something's going on, first of all, where the new nightmare is anyone who goes into a hospital in America to give birth to a child is treated like a kind of a criminal if they don't want to get an HIV test immediately for the mother, because what they want to do, they need a new market for their drugs, they have no customers, AIDS is over, it's long over, nothing is spreading, they don't have customers. So it seems to me that what they want to do is jack up the number of positive HIV tests. Now, dissident pain-in-the-ass types point out pregnant women will test positive for HIV, what we used to call a false positive, but it may turn out that there's no such thing as a true positive, but I don't want to get all esoteric. Back in Mississippi, baby, this mother comes in, nothing's wrong with her, nothing's wrong with that. She gives birth, they test her, she's positive, and they basically, as far as I can tell, abduct her baby, whisk it off somewhere, bomb it with at least 3 toxic AIDS drugs, make it sort of their miracle baby. I can't imagine, and I don't want to know what went on during those however many, I think it was like a year and a half or 2 years or something that this baby was supposedly on medication. So let's ask ourselves, why did the mother take the baby off the medication? Was there informed consent? I'm prepared to bet money. I don't have money. I'm prepared to bet that there was no informed consent. This is the other thing that's going on. They're really preying on people who have no power in society, who are ever going to hire lawyers. Informed consent is gone, gone, gone. Okay, so there was no informed consent. They did all this with this baby. For them to come up now and say, we have cured AIDS and this is our miracle baby, first of all, every baby born to an HIV antibody positive mother, every single one will be born antibody positive. 80 to 90% will shed maternal antibodies by themselves with no drugs within or after 18 months. So those 80 to 90%, each and every one of them, are indistinguishable from this magical cured baby in Mississippi that nobody has seen. If I just could have a journalism budget again, I would go down there and I would knock on doors and I would locate the family and locate the baby. And I believe that there's something unbelievably filthy and sinister about this whole story, but that's just my gut. But in terms of how bogus it is, utterly bogus, because what they've actually done here is held forth literally emperor has no clothes kind of situation. They came out with their multi-gazillion dollar PR bubble machine and they convinced everybody, we have a cure. But it's no different from the cure that nature works on virtually every baby that is born to an HIV antibody. I have a friend, for example. She lives in France. She's American. She lives in France. She's had 3 children. She's HIV positive. All 3 are HIV negative. So all 3 are cured. In other words, they started all this lunacy with this baby before ever establishing that the baby, quote, had HIV. Did that make any sense? It's so hard when, you know, you've been in this world for too long. Did that make sense?
Yeah. And it's the same way in cancer realm. Leukemia for old people and babies, you or younger children, they used to do the same thing. They say, okay, you just tested positive for leukemia. Come back in 3 months. It'll probably be, but we'll just keep an eye on it. But now, as soon as they see, oh, leukemia, boom, they get you on the chemotherapy, which interrupts the body's natural healing process, and then you don't get rid of it, and then you end up dying at all. It's just horrible, and interesting. I'm glad you brought that point up, the same thing, the 18 months with the HIV. You know, so you know that, but how do you know how they're able to snag a baby right away? Why don't they wait that 18 months? Some kind of law came in or something?
Because they're nuts. They're out of their minds. Sorry. zealotry doesn't begin to describe it. They're looking for some kind of personal salvation for themselves, and they've attached themselves to this mania about viral undetectability and the virus being gone and the virus being really, really, really gone. And there's no amount of virus being gone. The virus is gone to begin with. This is where Peter Duisberg comes in 1987. He says this thing doesn't infect any cells. It's not there. And then you have the group in Australia famously saying not only is there's not even an it that isn't there. I mean, this is the esoterica that I referenced before, and people are very welcome to jump right in, you know, get into it. It's all on the internet. But I don't think it's necessary. I think this is all very simple. It's really clear from all the data that AIDS, when it sprang up in the late 70s, early 80s, was not a viral illness, and there was no reason to think it was a viral illness. It was a multifactorial immune system crash that came out of the big cities, fast lane bathhouse gay culture with all of the drugs and the antibiotics and the just things that have only begun to really come out, you know, and that's a different discussion. But with what was going on with the stresses on those immune systems at that time, there was never any reason to suspect this was some novel virus, never mind retrovirus. So it came out of nothing, and it has wound up. I think I've heard a quote somewhere that evil is a void, right? That like evil can't be something, it has to be nothing. I have another definition of evil that I use that I think is really excellent, and it's from a Tarkovsky film, Andrei Tarkovsky, a film called The Sacrifice, which was his last movie. And in it, two of the characters are discussing evil, and the one says to the other, "What do you think evil is?" And his answer is so simple, amazing. He says, "Everything that is not necessary."
Nice.
Yeah, can I just jump in and say, I think it's kind of weird or ironic or whatever. It's about the selectiveness of who they secured of HIV, because according to U.S. law, I mean, I'm not sure if it's based on age or whatever, but if you have a test and it says you're HIV positive, and that's basically in the national health system on your health records, then you do another test and it says that you're HIV negative, then the positive test will basically overrule the negative test. And so you can't say, you can do like 10 tests, and if one of them says you're positive, then according to the U.S. health system, you're positive for HIV. And so it's weird how they're kind of selecting people and just saying, well, you're cured. And the same tests are like, what, 97% false or something? It's some insane.
Here's what I can say. This whole mess is about the HIV test. What we think we're seeing is through the HIV test. All the psychosis is through the HIV test. It's the HIV test that has to be stopped, handcuffed, you know, taken off somewhere, completely deconstructed. And I would openly counsel anybody to do everything in your power to resist, and they will put you increasingly in situations, especially if you're going in to give birth, but also anytime you wind up at the ER. I have a friend who went to the ER in Harlem. I live in New York City, and she had pneumonia, and they were really hassling her to take an HIV test. And she said they were hassling everybody in the ER. They were hassling people who were bleeding, who were, you know, kicking heroin. These women going around with clipboards, and this friend of mine said, "I don't want to test. I've tested. I'm negative. I'm not sexually involved right now. Thank you anyway." And they kept after them. So there's something going on. We need investigative reporters. We need citizen reporters to figure this out, because it's obviously financial. And I happen to think it's kind of religious too, but something is up, and it's this intersection of, in other words, some people say, well, this is the death throes of the beast, and there's some program or a massive incentive that's been put in place in every hospital, in every ER, where they really want people to get an HIV test, and they know that people under certain who have certain stressors are going to test positive. and then they have some customers. Now, I don't know if it's, I don't like speculating. That was speculative what I just said, but I do keep hearing that there's this really, really intense, bizarre pressure out there, and that it doesn't take much, like Bob Tuskin and his wife, for them to say,